Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Hello and welcome to Handy Link, sponsored by the Italian Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that promotes athletic and recreational opportunities for individuals with disabilities. For more information, visit ICHA.ca. I'm your host, Cam Wells. The first segment of our show, I'll be chatting with blind mural artist John Brambitt. So tell me a little bit about your work with Art Beyond Sight.
Oh, you know, one of the things that I like to do is working with museums and teaching. I'm mostly a studio artist, so I mostly do commissions and things. But the icing on the top, though, is being able to go around to schools and museums and to be able to teach and be able to show how really, the idea of vision and art, we call it the visual arts, but vision is a misnomer. You don't have to have vision to be able to appreciate art or to create art. And it's one of the wonderful things, I think, to me, that was a big surprise when it came to art.
So how does the community typically respond to your work?
It's positive. At first, when I first started painting, I think people were surprised that a visually impaired person could paint. But over the years, though, it seems like people are becoming more and more used to it, which is nice. And I think whenever somebody sees a painting of mine, a lot of times they look at it, or during a show, they'll go and they'll look at all the paintings, trying to see the blindness and trying to understand what perception truly is. And but I think I'm trying to do the same thing through painting.
So can you tell me a little bit about your learning curve, how you as a person with a vision impairment developed your technique?
Whenever I started painting in like 2002, I didn't know of any other blind painters, and I honestly thought I was crazy giving it a go. But I'd always drawn and illustrated it when I was sighted. I'd drawn all my life and taken every class that I could. But whenever I lost my eyesight, after I learned cane travel, or orientation and mobility techniques, learning how to navigate the world, I thought, if I can get around the city, surely I could also navigate across the canvas if I could touch and feel my way across. So I started drawing with lines that I could actually touch and feel, and then mixing paint so that every color felt different. And it was a very slow process. It was mind-numbingly slow, but it was also exhilarating. Every day it was something new, and it still is. I'm always trying to push it. But one of the things that I learned, though, is that painting as a visually impaired person is no different than painting as a sighted person. If you're an artist, you try to find what works for you, and it's one of the wonderful things about art is that it's just about what you can do. It doesn't matter what you can't do. You just find what works, and you go with that.
So, in your time as an artist, what's been the greatest success that you've witnessed?
Oh, mercy. Probably my depression and anger, being diminished through the artwork, to be honest. When I started painting, I never thought anybody would ever see a painting of mine. And my health was extremely bad at the beginning. So, the idea of really even being around long enough you know, for that, I mean, it wasn't even a thought. It was just art was my way of dealing with the situation that I was in, and it really still is. I've been fortunate. My art's gone to over 120 countries around the world. I've been able to do workshops with tens of thousands of people. It's just been this incredible blessing that I never would have expected or anticipated or even dreamed of. But the biggest success for me, though, I think, is internally, you know, that I'm a happier person now because of art.
So I heard you recently completed work on a mural.
Yeah, I sure did. I did a mural in Brooklyn, and I'm about to start two other murals in Dallas, and the two other are going to be huge. They're like four stories tall, each one, and they're about 90 feet long, and it's a scary idea. I mean, I'm used to painting on a canvas that's small, but it's going to be exciting, though. I'm looking forward to it. It's fun to work big.
So, if you could send any one message to the community about the need for inclusion in the arts and the success that can be achieved, what would you say?
Oh my goodness! You know, art is for everyone. It's the thing that makes us human. It's just, you know, expressing our ideas and our emotions to other people, and it's incredible how it just opens you up. Even from a practical standpoint, like my ability to travel, to get around, to navigate, is so much better because of painting. Because I'm just practicing my cane technique, you know, every time I paint, and it has this incredible freedom to it too. Being able to create, be able to work on something, and I know for me, I was depressed a lot and I was angry a lot in the beginning. And I didn't feel like I could do anything new. I didn't feel like anything could change in my life. But then I started painting every day. And then, you know, and you were making changes. And you were creating something. And, you know, and it just broke me out of that rut, I think. You know, and I started looking at things in a different way.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this. But if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you so much.
Of course. Next up, we're going to hear from one of the athletes in the recent ICHA soccer tournament. This is Cam Wells here with
Theo Spear.
He's going to be telling me a little bit about South Simcoe's participation in this year's tournament. So what can you tell me about South Simcoe being here?
Well, we've been doing this for over, I don't know how many years, but I've been with the team for about 3 or 4 years. So,
can you tell me a little bit about why it is South Simcoe comes out and gets involved?
Well, we come out and get involved to help play with the other teams. And we're always here for fun. Our team loves soccer. We're huge soccer fans.
So, throughout the year, you get involved with the training programs to get ready for this event.
Somewhat. We usually just stick with our soccer team and do our practices on whenever we need to help get us prepared for even a tournament.
What's the best part for you?
Best part's just coming here to have fun.
So, is there anything you want the community to know about why these events are important?
I think these events are important because if you don't get involved in soccer, there's not much else you can get involved in. Like, if soccer wasn't around, the soccer really need soccer. So,
can you tell me a little bit about the players themselves, the ability levels that you have?
Everyone has their own abilities. Everyone has a neutral benefit to the team. Like, we have good goalies, we have good forwards, defense. I just started playing backup goalie this year, so.
Thank you very much.
No problem.
Folks, I'm sure you enjoyed that soccer interview just as much as me, so we're going to give you another one. Coming up next, we have another on-location piece from the recent ICHA soccer tournament. Cam Wells here with
Justin McNichol.
He's going to be telling me a little bit about South Simcoe's participation in this year's ICHA soccer tournament. So tell me a little bit about how the games are going today.
Well, we have two teams. We have a C division and a D division. And our D division is what we have on the field right now, and they're doing really good. And we have a C division, as I'm on the C division, and we're doing okay too. And we're all just here to have some fun.
And have you participated in years past?
Yeah, actually, I've been coming here for 10, 11 years now.
So, do you find this year's tournament to be about the same? Or
about the same, yeah.
What are some of the high points for you?
Well, all the teams here are doing really well. Like, Brampton is evenly matched. All the teams, even the C and D divisions, are always evenly matched. So it's kind of fun.
So, when you're not here at the tournament, does your team spend a lot of time preparing or training for it?
Yep. We do a few months. We play and we make sure we hone on everything that we need to do.
So, if you could send any message to the community about why these programs are important, what would you say?
What would I say? I think teamwork is great. And I think we should have more awareness of the special needs community and let us do a lot more like baseball, basketball, and all that because it's so much fun.
Do you think there's hope to get these programs in place eventually?
Hopefully, yes. I think it's complete hope.
Thank you very much for taking the time.
You're welcome, Saul.
HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Are you a new or returning student at the university? Looking for a creative outlet that incorporates music and fun? Why not volunteer at CJAM FM? Volunteering isn't hard. All you need are a pair of headphones and the enthusiasm to learn. So grab some friends and email programcjam@gmail.com or come on down to the station. We're located in the basement of the CAW Student Center on the UWIN campus. And tune into CJAM anytime on the UWinsor app or online at www.cjam.ca.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that promotes athletic and recreational opportunities for individuals with disabilities. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from John Brambitt and a little bit about the ICHA soccer tournament. In this segment of our show, we'll hear from Professor Laverne Jacobs from the University of Windsor. So tell me a little bit about your thoughts on advocacy for people with disabilities.
Thanks, Cam. I think that when it comes to advocacy for people with disabilities, it's important to focus on how to realize disability rights that have been promised through several equality instruments. So by these equality instruments, I'm referring to things like the Canadian Charter, Accessibility for Ontarians with Disabilities Act and similar acts in other provinces and even at the federal level, and also the CRPD, which kind of supplements many of the rights that we have here in Canada. Yes, so the UN Convention, I'd referred to it probably by the acronym, the CRPD, but yes, the UN Convention on the Rights of People with Disabilities. I think that when we look at advocacy and when we try to do advocacy, one of the goals that I have through the various projects that I've tried to put in place is to focus on developing stronger laws. So having good knowledge base, having well-researched knowledge that reflects and addresses the concerns of people with disabilities, and working to bring that into the laws from the get-go. That's very important, I think.
So, what are some of the most common barriers facing getting stronger laws and more advocacy in place?
Well, I think the barriers start with the barriers that are in society for people with disabilities generally. So I mean, there are a number of them, but I often hear of barriers relating to employment. I think that's a really, really high on the list. Barriers relating to accessible housing, accessible transportation is another one that I hear about quite often. These are just a few, but the list goes on. In terms of turning those, addressing those barriers and developing stronger laws, I think the piece that's missing is bringing kind of thoroughly researched, evidence-based material to the ears of those who are actually creating policy, so to the government. And that can sometimes be a challenge because the avenues aren't there or, you know, because of other reasons, but primarily because the avenues aren't there.
But when it comes to things like the AODA, the plan to phase in full accessibility, I think there's a lack of monitoring going on. It's fine to have all the plans and to say, we want to make this accessible, but who's taking it to an individual level, day by day?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so taking it to an individual level day by day, absolutely. And I think that, you know, it's that's partly an advocacy question. There's also partly a funding question, so pushing to make sure that the government you know, is supplying some sort of funding sometimes to assist with making the province accessible, and you know, whether it's in time or even a little bit late. But yeah, I think there's several different types of challenges there.
So do you see society making any progress toward accessibility and equal rights? And if so, how have you seen this?
I think we have made some progress. I think that education is a big one. So people are more aware of the issues, you know, principally because of tools like the AODA or hearing about different cases that have been brought forward and other spheres of equality law relating to disability. So I think education has changed things a bit. In terms of the actual physical changes on the ground, there have been some changes. I mean, I've noted and people have talked about customer service is improving in some ways. You know, people are at least more aware. Workers in stores are more aware to come up to people with various disabilities and ask if they can assist. But there are still, you know, many miles to go. And the areas that I've mentioned earlier are some of the places where we see a lot of work that still needs to be done. So housing, transportation, both local transportation and transportation on airplanes, railways, et cetera. I mean, there's still a lot of places for improvement. And I'll mention just two others. One is social integration. So, you know, if people with disabilities are becoming more more prevalent, more aware, as they should be, more included in community, we need to also work on the piece of how others will interact with people with disabilities. And I'm hearing a lot about social integration, whether it's in the workplace or in the general community, you know, how to work with people daily. And just kind of an extension of that is the problems that we've seen with violence against people with disabilities. And that's particularly a huge challenge, especially with things we've seen lately, such as the individual with autism in Mississauga who was recently beaten quite savagely. We need to have some sort of strategy to address things like that.
So if you could send any message to the community about the need to prioritize this sort of protection, this sort of equal access, what would you say?
Well, I would definitely say that it's a high priority. I think that it's important that as a community we're inclusive, and at bottom that this is about respect for everyone in the community. You know, it sends a very strong and very negative message when members of our society are mistreated simply because of who they are, not to mention the kind of concomitant insults that's experienced by people with disabilities. So I think it's definitely a high priority, things can be changed by focusing on the concept of respect.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Thanks.
This next segment of our show, I'll be chatting with
Denise Schuker,
who's going to be telling us a little bit about Accessibility Awareness Day here at the university.
Yes.
So, what can you tell me about this year's AAD?
Well, this is our sixth year at the University of Windsor. It's my first year coordinating the event, but we're
my
quite
sympathies.
Excited. No, it's been great. We like to do things that promote accessibility and increasing awareness on our campus, and this gives us a great opportunity to do that.
So, what sorts of messages do you hope to impart to those in attendance, particularly among students? There's always a need and even a hunger to learn more and process more about what a disability is.
Absolutely. This year, our theme is accessibility more than meets the eye. So we're really trying to provide a day that raises awareness of invisible disabilities. And I think in terms of our student population, our keynote presentation is just dynamic. It is a group of four students here who are Lancers on campus who have each done truly remarkable things throughout their time here on campus, but also in the broader community to increase the awareness of barriers, to remove barriers, to fight stigma associated with mental health challenges. So they really are an interesting group of individuals, and I think they're going to be quite inspirational to hear.
So, not to spoil any surprise or anything, but can you give me an example of one of the students' actions in this arena?
Sure. So one of our students, Julia, is actually a grad student, and she is working with adults and people in the community who suffer from aphasia. So through her research, she's actually she's working with people in the community who have aphasia, and the research is actually really interesting, and the community input is just phenomenal. They've actually gone out and worked with a number of business owners to develop menus, for example, so that people who have this disability are included and they are able to go into a restaurant and order a meal unassisted. So I think it really speaks to, you know, things that we can all look at differently and do differently in our everyday life to remove barriers. And it's really quite an inspirational story.
So if you could send any message to the community about the need for methods such as this for equal inclusion, what would you say?
I think my message would be that there's always an opportunity to look how you can make, you know, the world around you and your particular universe more inclusive for everyone. There's always, you know, an opportunity to look at things a different way. And I think one of the things that we're happy about this year is that these keynotes and all of our speakers really address some things that we can all do in our lives to remove barriers for people and to make sure that we're thinking about accessibility and inclusion all the time, that it's just a natural thing that we're thinking about and then we're making it actually happen.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this.
Thank you very much for having me.
Of course. To wrap up today's show, I'm going to be chatting with
Abby Stotts.
And she's going to be telling us a little bit about the upcoming Walk for Down Syndrome Day and what she expects from it.
So this past Wednesday was World Down Syndrome Day, where we celebrate those in our community with Down Syndrome. This Sunday, March 25th, we are holding our fourth annual Down Syndrome Day Walk that is held by the University of Windsor's Disability Studies Student Association. is going to be at Assumption Park on Riverside. We've contacted a lot of different community groups, so we hope to see a lot of turnout from the community, also members from our school. 100% of the donations and money raised at this walk are going to be donated to Up About Down Windsor Essex County. So they run programs for members in the community with Down syndrome. So different like cooking classes and things like that.
So what inspired you to want to get involved with this event?
So it started 4 years ago, and basically I think they made an initial contact with Up About Down Windsor just because they knew that they needed to raise funds. Once we did it the first year, we realized how successful it was. A lot of people really enjoyed it. Up About Down Windsor was very thankful, and the money went to great programs within our community. So, yeah, after the first year, we knew that it was an annual event.
So what are your hopes for this year's? Do you think it'll be different or similar to previous years?
This year, I've been really focusing on reaching out to different groups in the community. In the past years, I think we've raised around $800 each year, so I think we're trying to surpass at least 1,000. The more money raised for this community program, the better.
So do you see yourself getting involved in similar work to support Down syndrome and other advocacy programs in the community?
Yeah, I think it's great raising funds for different organizations in our community. It's great to learn what the community has to offer and support them. So I think next year, Disability Studies Student Association should really focus on more organizations we can support and raise funds for.
So if you could send any message to the community about why they should support this work, what would you say?
I would say it only betters a community. Every donation helps. By kind of bettering others, you're bettering the community as well.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
Of course. So when it comes to an event like this, it's great to see that the students at the U are really reaching beyond themselves. It's fine to say, I don't have a disability myself, it doesn't affect me, and turning a blind eye to it. But we as a people, we as a community, we just don't do it anymore because we've come to realize that it affects every aspect of who and what we are. There's not a family out there that hasn't been touched by disability. Particularly, things like Up About Down, providing support for people with Down syndrome. Fact is, those affected can still lead a productive, full life. A few years ago, I interviewed a man who owns numerous Tim Hortons franchises. Most of his employees have some form of disability, including some with Down syndrome. Fact is, they put in a full day's work, they contribute, and they're even appreciated by the customers. You can have the same diet of the same vanilla people over and over again, the same type, but do you learn by it? Do you grow? I put it to you, my friends, you don't. You have to look at all types of people, get to know their stories, lend a hand where you can. That's the only way that you as a person, we as a society, can do better by our fellow human beings. Fact is, it's extremely difficult to look in the eyes of a person with Down syndrome or any disability and to say, I'm not going to include you. Why? Because it's not something I understand, not something I'm comfortable with. Because looking upon the human face of someone, you realize they're just that, a person, strength, character, and dignity, and they have a right to be included. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.